You are listening to Pastor Talk.
Is it a struggle for some single adults in church to think that the married people view their opinions as valid? So if they say something, if they try to make a contribution, do they have kind of an innate concern that all these other people are married and they're just not going to think that my opinion is as valid? Is that something that single adults struggle with?
Yeah, they really do. Because, in large part because, so much of what goes on in churches, again, is family-focused.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the people with common life experiences tend to flock together. So, you know, the parents, their kids are all playing together, the wives are hanging out together, the husbands are hanging out together, everybody has stuff in common, and a lot of times the married person just sort of gets the feeling that if this person over here has no spouse or children and can't share those experiences with me, you know, they're kind of not worth my time.
Welcome to Pastor Talk, the podcast of Lifeway Pastors, giving you the tools and encouragement you need to shepherd your flock well. I'm your host, Marty Durin.
On this episode of Pastor Talk, I am joined by Gina D'Alfonso, editor of Breakpoint.org and occasional writer for Breakpoint Radio. She's editor of Dickens Blog and a columnist at Christ and Pop Culture. Gina's writing has been published in The Atlantic, Christianity Today, First Things, The Weekly Standard, On Faith, and others. One by One, Welcoming the Singles in Your Church is her book, and we'll be talking about it today. Hey, everybody, this is Marty again, and I am happy to welcome to Pastor Talk today Gina D'Alfonso, author of One by One, Welcoming the Singles in Your Church. Gina, how are things in Virginia?
Things are great, thank you.
Is it rainy there, or sunshine, or hurricane, or what?
It's nice today. We had a lot of rain in recent weeks, but that's okay because the flowers liked it, and we had rather a dry summer before that, but today it's very nice. That's sunny, a little bit cool.
That's awesome. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but One by One is your first book. Is that correct?
I had done a little bit of self-publishing before, but okay. This is my first book with a publisher. Baker Books brought it out.
Excellent. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
That's a big deal. So why not tell us about yourself?
Well, I live in the D.C. area, as you said, in Northern Virginia. I've been here for many years. And I attend a small Anglican church here. Until recently, I was at a non-denominational evangelical church. And let's see, in addition to writing the book, I do a lot of freelance writing for various outlets like, Christianity Today and The Atlantic and, Weekly Standard and a number of others.
Cool. Very good. So we're talking about singles in the church today, specifically how to welcome singles in the church today, which is a pretty important thing. And I'm going to guess here that whether our listeners are Baptist, Methodist, Anglican, or non-denominational, that most churches react either good or ill in the same way when it comes to singles ministry. Is that true?
Yes. Well, it is. There is some variety there. There are singles ministries that are really good, and then there are singles ministries that act more like quarantine to sort of shield the single people from the rest of the church. They're not meant that way, but they sort of function that way. And then there are churches with no singles ministry at all. There is quite a wide variety. I tend to say that singles ministry depends very much on the context that you do it in.
Mm-hmm.
It's really all about the underlying attitude to single people and whether they're being fully integrated into the whole life of the church.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes singles ministry helps with that, and sometimes it sort of gets in the way. So I think churches really need to sort of be aware of their own context, their own congregational needs, and sort of proceed accordingly.
Okay, good. So So you're not making the case that every church needs a singles ministry, but you're making the case that every church needs to be welcoming to singles. Is that right?
That's exactly it. And I think more churches are just now starting to become aware of this need, because I think more people are talking about it now. Not just me. There are other writers bringing up books, writing articles, and speaking up about this, because it was sort of a neglected population for a long time. I interviewed a number of fellow single people for the book, and a lot of them told me that they have just had the experience of being ignored or marginalized or actively pushed aside in the church, because so many of our churches are set up on the model of the family is the basic unit,
right.
You know, of the Christian population,
right.
Which is not true. I mean, the family is an important thing and a great thing and something that deserves support. But if we idolize family, just like whenever we make an idol out of a good thing,
sure.
And put it on a pedestal, then somebody ends up getting hurt, because that's not the way it's supposed to work. And when we idolize family, the single people tend to get left out.
Well, I mean, if we think about it in broad terms, I guess a single adult is a family of one, and that's not
right.
That's not unbiblical for sure. Jesus was, you know, he managed it somehow or another.
Right. That's very true.
So that's I appreciate you bringing up the awareness issue. I mentioned to you offline a moment ago that I did. I was a singles pastor for a number of years. This would have been in the mid 90s, I guess, and. There was an awareness then that, hey, there's a large population that either aren't married at this moment for some reason, or they've never married for choice or not timing or whatever. But there's this large population of unmarried adults who we're not really focusing on, but there's a bunch of them. Is the trend increasing as far as percent of population in the United States, maybe as that are single adults, or is it leveled off at some point?
It has grown. It has definitely grown, both inside the church and outside the church, and the church does not always know how to handle this, because we have sort of. Not always consciously, put together a set of qualities that sort of go with singleness and childlessness.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear these messages a lot that, you know, we are, if we don't get married young and have lots of children, we're sort of contributing to the fall of Western civilization or something like that. You really, once you start listening for it, you really hear that a lot. And the thing is, you know, that is, if anything, that is more Old Testament thinking than New Testament thinking, because between the two, the emphasis shifts from, you know, the growth of a nation and families and so forth that God was building to God building a church. And having children, while it's a wonderful thing, it's not the way that God says in the New Testament that he's building his church. He's building his church through us evangelizing and bringing people into the church. And, you know, that could work with single people, too. As with a growing singles population, I mean, that is a mission field right there. And instead of being worried or fearful of this population, the church has got to be reaching out to them and evangelizing them, just like it would any other people group.
That's a great point. Tell me a little bit how to distinguish. I'll set this up, and then you tell me how this can work. When I was a singles pastor, I had, I guess the way I think about it then was I had a group within my ministry, and I had like ages, say, maybe around 28 or 29 up to mid 60s, all as single adults. And there were some who had never been married. Then there were some who had previously been married. In the previously been married section or grouping, you had those who were divorced, and in that subset, you had those who were divorced because they chose to be, and those who were divorced and did not want to be, and then you had people whose spouses had died. So there were four, like, categories of single adults, not even taking age into account. Mm-hmm. How can churches effectively welcome, because already admitting that most churches don't understand singles very well, so then they want to welcome all singles as if they're just like one little one little group.
Yeah.
When there's mm-hmm. there's subsets of single adults, how can churches be welcoming effectively when there really are different experiences that singles have had?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I noticed that you also mentioned the age factor in there too, like from 20s to 60s.
Yeah.
A lot of singles groups do something like that, and then that can end up being a little awkward too. we really are all in different places and with different experiences. And so it's wise, I think, to consider maybe, seeing if you can do some subgroups within the singles ministry, and also just consider mixing them all into the church as much as you can, because the broad goal, and sometimes all members of a group, you know, sort of just need to get together and decompress and be where they can understand each other.
Some shared experiences.
We know that.
Sure.
But also there are a lot of times when we all as a church body need to be together and mixing in. And so, you know, it's good for the never been married people to spend time with the married people, and it's good for the divorced people maybe to spend time with the widows or the widows with the young parents. You can mix it up. So it's true that, as you say, each population has certain characteristics, maybe certain needs that need to be thought about and considered. But we mustn't leave out the idea of, you know, just seeing how we can get more different kinds of people together, maybe to mentor each other a little bit, maybe just to encourage some friendships across boundaries for people to learn more about each other. All of that, as to the extent that we can do it, is good and healthy.
Can pastors facilitate a kind of a healthy atmosphere for single adults in the way that they use language in their preaching?
Mm-hmm.
I guess most pastors are married. I mean, my anecdotally, mm-hmm. most of the ones that I've known over my preaching career, for lack of a better term, ministry, since 1989, the overwhelming majority of pastors, especially lead pastors, have been married. And the use of language, because we're coming from a married context, most of us, with children, most of us. Our illustrations often flow from our personal experience. So it's our interaction with our spouse, or it's our interaction with our kids. Can pastors learn to weave in words and phrases that let single people know, hey, I see you and I know you're here, without resorting to the don't commit this sin phase, mm-hmm. you know, of the preaching?
Yes, absolutely. And that is so important. Part of the way to do that is just for the pastors to get to know the single people just as they get to know the married people and their congregation.
That's a good point.
And part of that is making sure that single people are included at the institutional level. You know, they're included on committees. They're included, maybe you have some pastors in the church that are single, and not just the singles pastor. You know, that they are allowed to play leadership roles and to be deeply involved. And you would be surprised, you personally might not be, but a lot of people would be surprised to know just how often that doesn't happen. That there is a perception that a lot of us have had to deal with, that single people are less mature. And when you have that underlying assumption, you're not going to want to make them leaders in the church. You're going to sort of put them to the side and not allow them to serve as much as the married people. It happens a lot. And I use an expression in the book, we're sent to the kids' table, you know, like at Thanksgiving, right. Where the adults are at one table and the kids are at another table. And a lot of single people say they feel like they're stuck at the kids' table. Mm. And from that position, you don't have a lot of influence, and you don't have a lot of people listening to what you have to say because they think you don't have anything worthwhile to say. So if pastors are making a conscious effort to see that single people are included everywhere they should be, you know, everywhere that everyone else is, then their voices are going to be more influential, and then it's going to be more second nature to talk about single people the way you would talk about married people and not just make everything about marriage all the time.
That's very good. I'm looking at page 23 in your book, and you quote a selection from 1 Corinthians 7 about the unmarried that Paul is addressing. Mm-hmm. And then you write, these verses remind us or should remind us that singleness is not a moral failing or a cause for shame. On the contrary, the single person has equal worth and dignity with the married person before God. I think of two women that are, one is extraordinarily well known in modern missionary history. The other one is not as well known. But the only reason that the extraordinarily well-known one is known is two reasons. One is her husband was killed in the line of missionary work, and she wrote a couple of books related to that. Of course, I'm talking about Elizabeth Elliot.
Right.
Rachel Saint, however, her brother was killed at the same time that Jim Elliot was killed. Elizabeth Elliot and Rachel Saint ministered in Ecuador together, but then after a certain amount of time, Elizabeth Elliot came, I think, back to the United States, ended up marrying, I think, again, and her husband died, and then she married again and was married until they both were old. Mm-hmm. But Rachel Saint stayed in Ecuador, and if my memory is accurate, she ministered in the same place with the same people for decades until near or at her death in her early 90s, just short years ago. And yet the one that we think of the most is the one who came back and, you know, remarried.
Yeah.
The one who was single, I think, her entire life, Nate Saint's sister, Rachel, is really the paragon or a paragon of missionary service, Christian living, you know, biblical commitment. And yet she's the one that doesn't get the press, for lack of a better term. And I think being really careful to note the tremendous contribution to the kingdom that single people have made through the years is it's almost like a gimme. It's just like here, there's, you know, all these stories that could be told that not only remind married people of what single people have done in the kingdom, but encourage single people, hey, look, I really can have an impact here.
Yeah. Yeah, that is an excellent point. And as you say, we already have so many examples from the past and from the present, too. And it's good to talk about that. It's good to make people more aware because it can be difficult for a single person to get the impression through his or her church experience that they are limited and their contributions aren't as valuable when, in fact, that couldn't be farther from the truth.
Is it a struggle for some single adults in church to think that the married people view their opinions as valid? So if they say something, if they try to make a contribution, do they have kind of an innate concern that all these other people are married and they're just not going to think that my opinion is as valid? Is that something that single adults struggle with?
Yeah, they really do. In large part because so much of what goes on in churches, again, is family focused.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that people with common life experiences tend to flock together. So, you know, the parents, their kids are all playing together, the wives are hanging out together, the husbands are hanging out together, everybody has stuff in common. And a lot of times, the married person just sort of gets the feeling that if this person over here has no spouse or children and can't share those experiences with me, you know, they're kind of not worth my time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really unfortunate because we single people are so very much in need of friendship, so dependent on it
mm-hmm.
sometimes in a way that married people aren't always. And, you know, a lot of the married people, they have a lot of demands on their time, especially the parents. You know, that is just a given. We all know that. But church helps you sort of have a social outlet, have activities that everybody can do together. So church sort of is conducive to helping those married people find things that they can do to get to know other people a little bit. But single people end up getting left out of that stuff. A lot of single people told me this because they make it family focused. Whereas if they were willing to open it up and mix it up a little bit, we single people wouldn't necessarily have to be such a demand on everybody's time if they would just let us participate in all the stuff that they're already doing. So we could be doing this a lot better than we are, and we need to move more in that direction.
You your first chapters are singles as problems, singles as pariahs, singles as projects, and singles as people. Clearly, we don't have time for you to go, you know, dissertation length on all of those. But really quickly, talk about how you, why you broke down kind of the understanding or the general understanding of singles and what you hope to, what you hope people can take away from the wrong ways and the right ways.
Yeah, the way that we treat people is based so much on the way that we see them. Like I was saying, so often we're not aware of our own attitudes and our own blind spots. We look at people who are different from us, and we have a set of preconceptions about them. And that's especially true if we've been hearing some bad messages about them. Again, like I said, the message that they're less mature, or that they're more self-centered, or, you know, that they're what's wrong with this country because, you know, they're not having kids like everybody is supposed to. We get this stuff in our heads, and then we see other people through a distorted lens, and that comes out in the way that we talk to them, the way we treat them. As you probably saw in the book, people say things to single Christians sometimes that just make your jaw drop. And, it's not out of malice. That is so important to note. It's not out of malice. It's not meant to be unkind. They just don't understand because they are seeing them in the wrong way. So, so that's why I wanted to sort of break down the way that people look at singles. You know, they're either a problem to be solved, or they're pariahs to just sort of, you know, not really have much to do with, or their projects to be fixed. And I want to help people sort of put all that aside, get rid of that, and start saying, these are people just like me. They're in a different life situation, but they're here worshiping God right beside me. They love God too. And they are my brothers and sisters in Christ, and that's how I need to look at them, and that's how I need to start treating them. And I think that can change a lot. I'm hopeful that it will.
I'm not sure when this will air, but as of this date, Thanksgiving is coming up soon, and Christmas, of course, shortly thereafter. I know that some people have both kind of towards senior adults and sometimes towards single adults, trying to focus on these times of year in church, kind of paying attention or trying to pay attention to people who don't have other family to go home to or other family that they'll be gathering with. And so, you know, for a number of years before we moved to Tennessee, we had a senior adult widow in our church, and we brought her over every Christmas for our family gathering. So she had no family close by. Her kids were grown and gone. Her husband had passed away. So, and she became, for those several years, I mean, she was part of our family, not just, you know, the lady at church that we called Miss So-and-so. Is it good to reach out at this time of year, or does it feel a little forced, or does it depend on the authenticity of the person who's doing the asking?
It's wonderful, and I think it's so great that you did that. Of course, authenticity is important, but... it's a great thing, and I hope more churches will do that, because, you know, if you listen, you hear a lot of single people saying they dread this time of year. I was talking to a guy just the other day who felt like that. His parents are gone. He doesn't have a lot of, you know, close friends around him, and it's just, you know, his birthday gets ignored. He feels ignored at Christmas and Thanksgiving, and it's just hard. Yeah. I mean, we do make a big deal out of these holidays, and a lot of times, and the wider culture especially makes them all about family. And even if you know what they're really about, right, like the birth of Christ, for instance, it that is sort of just permeating the air so much that it's hard not to feel really down about that. And so I wish our culture would make it less about family, sure, but that's a wider conversation. But you know, even within the church, you know, that they're often referred to as very important, you know, family holidays. And that's when the church needs to remember that it is the family of God, and to reach out and to make sure that everybody is included.
That's excellent. So, just to be clear, if you're listening and, there are singles of any age, really, in your church, and especially those that are detached from friends or family at this time of year, these are two good opportunities to initiate deeper conversations, deeper relationships, broader opportunities to bring some of these folks in, as many as you can, to deeper friendships. And we had some friends, now, the ones who did this, in fact, the guy who is the husband in this situation is actually the engineer on this podcast, so he's going to hear me talking about him right now. They were married at the time that they started doing this, but all of the friends that they gathered weren't married, and they did Friendsgiving every year.
Oh, how nice.
And so they would bring together married and single friends, and they had just gotten married, so a lot of their friends were still single. And do a Thanksgiving dinner at their house because all of their friends couldn't go back home and they weren't going to be around family. And, so that's an option for folks, is to organize a Friendsgiving at your house and just invite people who are friends to be friends. And, so that's an opportunity.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this question. And this is kind of, one of my pet peeves a little bit. Churches like to say that they're welcoming. So, you know, come, we're a welcoming church, we're a friendly church. There's a big difference to me between trying to welcome people and them actually feeling welcomed. Mm-hmm. On one, it's what we're attempting to do. On the other side, it's whether we're actually successful at what we're attempting to do. So what's it going to take for the average church, for single adults to feel like this is home? This is my family. I am welcome here. It's not just, you know, at the Sunday morning greeting, hey, welcome, glad everybody's here. But I am a part of things. I'm immersed in this family, and I love them, and they love me, and they don't require that I, you know, adapt to married preferences in order to be a part of things. Is that doable in most churches?
Yes, it is, but it's going to take churches recognizing the fact that they need single people as much as single people need them.
Good.
That's what will lead them to truly value singles and reach out to them and express their own need for them. That's what it's going to take, because we have needs of our own, but we also have a lot to give back. Mm-hmm. It's a give and take relationship. It's not just about one or the other special interest group saying, hey, don't ignore us, we're over here, you're not paying attention to us. It's not about that. Mm-hmm. It's about us all being part of the body of Christ, and the body, as Paul says, needing every part of it of itself in order to function.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what it's going to take, that recognition, because when you know you're really needed, then and that you can have that kind of reciprocal relationship, that's when you really start to feel welcome.
That's fantastic. My guest today on Pastor Talk has been Gina D'Alfonso, author of One by One, Welcoming the Singles in Your Church. And I would encourage you to give it a look and track her down on some of her online writings. You can find her name spelled on the podcast episode. I don't know that I've ever known anyone with your last name. How many other Dalfonsos do you run across?
It's not a common one, that's for sure. There's a few of us scattered around here and there, but and I understand, of course, there's more of us in Italy, so I hope sometime to track some of them down. But yeah, it's not a very common name.
That's awesome. Well, thanks again for being here, and I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
Pastor Talk is the podcast of Lifeway Pastors and is hosted by Marty Duran. That's me. Join us each week as I interview pastors, authors, professors, and others to help your ministry as you seek to shepherd your flock well. Until next time, this is Marty Duran.